Now, for some of you, Rabbanit Henkin does not need an introduction because you heard her last night for a beautiful presentation. For some of you, you have had a chance to hear her in other contexts all around the world. As I mentioned once, even as far as Hong Kong recently.
That seems to be very impressive.
Yeah.
Most people, except for fugitives, don't make it that far generally. I'm not implying anything, but I'm just observing it. Maybe I should turn off the recording right now. So Rabbanit Henkin is known around the world as a preeminent educator, and we thought that it would be incredibly fitting that as part of our Neely Institute, of our Chicago Institute of Women's Learning, our efforts to continue to enhance the accessibility of Talmud Torah to women throughout our community, it would be super appropriate to have Rabbanit Henkin to address us as part of this conference. Rabbanit Henkin is the founder and the dean of Nishmat, which has many different educational programs for women. For those who are there in the summertime, they have a summer program. In Elul, they also have an opportunity for learning for women during Elul. They have all kinds of programs for women who are in Yerushalayim, but even beyond. You could speak with Dave Metkowski, who is somewhere around in the building. Good morning, Dave, and thank you for helping arrange this presentation and all of the technical details about the various wonderful activities and learning opportunities that the Nishmat has to offer. And without any further ado, the world-renowned and a great guest of ours here in Chicagoland, Rabbanit Hannah Henkin.
What's the time frame until when? 11:30. Boker tov to everybody. I'm delighted to be here with you. I'm delighted to see you. Rabbi Brandt, since I arrived in Chicago, I've been hearing your praises sung, and now I see why. I think it must be, it's very important that you ladies are getting together to learn Torah. It's something which is of importance to you yourselves, it's of importance to your families, but it's also of importance to the community. So I'm delighted to be here and to participate. And whenever I give a shiur, when I travel, and apparently I do travel extensively, my hope is that I'm going to seed a desire to keep learning. That would be my pleasure, that afterwards some of you come over to me during the course of the day and say, listen, this was very nice, but it was one time. What do I do to continue learning? And if there's anyone who wishes to have that conversation with me today, I'm delighted to have that conversation with you.
Can you speak just a little louder? I can try.
Is there, Rabbi Brand, is there amplification here?
Is it possible to move up the... We discussed it a little bit yesterday. It's a good amplification system in this building currently. So we discussed it yesterday. Like a head mic.
If there's anyone who is still unable to hear me, I want to suggest that you just take your chairs and move them up this way because we don't need to sit in rows. So please feel free to do so. I would also like to repeat, I would like to thank you, Dave Metkowski, the Executive Director of American Friends of Nishmat, for being here on this trip together with me, and also visiting your Ima in the bargain. And as well, I repeat the invitation to come and to learn at Nishmat. There's a three-week July program, which is for women of all ages and all backgrounds. You're too late for this year, but you can do so for next year, or just come visit us when you are in Israel. Apparently I have a whole bunch of these handouts. Is there anyone who doesn't have? Okay. I'm going to place the extras here next to Aza. And if anyone needs them, please help yourself. Okay. You have the sources in Hebrew and in the English. The subject which I'm speaking about is Why did David choose Jerusalem? Let me introduce the subject. Until David HaMelech, there was no such thing as an Ir Bira, as a capital city in Israel. The capital city at any given time was the place of residence of the particular leader of Israel. So if you were Shmuel and you came from Ramah, then the capital city for the duration of your lifetime would be Ramah. If you happen to come from the north of Israel, then that's where the capital city was. The concept of capital city did not exist. In addition to that, the religious center, the place where the Aron was, the place where the Mizbeach, the altar was in no way connected to the place of the leader of Israel. David's choice of Jerusalem is perplexing for the following reason. If you start with the fourth source on the page, you will see the events transpiring after the death in battle of King Saul and of his three sons, including Crown Prince Yonatan, who was killed in a battle with the Philistines. Ladies, please, if you're not following me, just raise your hand, speak up, and I will give you the background information. You may or may not remember that following Saul's failure, King Shaul's failure to put Agag Melech Amalek to death, king of Amalek, and as well his failure to follow the instructions of Shmuel to fully obliterate all of the livestock and not to touch the spoils. At that point, the prophet told Shmuel, God has torn the kingship from your hands and he will give it to your friend who is better than you. It is at that point that Shmuel was sent by God to anoint David ben Yishai as king of Israel, as prince of Israel. However, David did not serve during Shaul's lifetime. He served Shaul, but though he was anointed as king of Israel, he did not exercise that anointment during the lifetime of Shaul. And you can recall from the episode of the cutting of the garment of Shaul, which David always regretted, that David related during his lifetime to Shaul as king. He was chosen, but he was not realizing the appointment during Shaul's lifetime. Now, Shaul was killed in battle, as was Crown Prince Yonatan, David's closest friend and associate, as were two more sons of Shaul, and they were all hanged. It is at that point that David turned to God and posed a question to God. Follow along with me, the fourth source in the... Oh, it's this, the first source in the English and the fourth source in the Hebrew. In Shmuel Aleph Perek Bet. Vayihi acharechen vayishal David b'Hashem lemor ha'ele ba'achat arei Yehuda. Vayomer Hashem elav ale. Vayomer David ana e'ele vayomer chevrona. Vayal sham David, I will translate, v'gam shtei nashav achinoam ha'yisraelit ואביגיל אשת נבל הכרמלי, ואנשיו אשר אמו העלה דוד, איש וביתו, וישבו בערי חברון. ויבואו אנשי יהודה, וימשכו שם את דוד למלך על בית יהודה. And after this, David inquired of the Almighty, saying, shall I go up to any of the cities of Judah? The tribe of Judah has within it cities, And the Almighty said to him, go up. And David said, where shall I go up? And he said, to Hebron. David went up there, and his two wives also, Ahinoam the Israelite, and Abigail, wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And his men who were with him, David brought up, every man in his household, and they settled in the cities of Hebron, in other words, in the outskirts, the satellite cities of Hebron. The people of Judah came, the tribe of Yehudah, and they there anointed David king over the house of Yehudah. I'll speak here. Let me try to explain what's going on and then put before you a second text which has puzzled me, which leads to asking why did David choose Jerusalem? When David turned to God and said, Ha'e'ele ba'achat are Yehudah, shall I go up to one of the cities of Yehudah? David was then in exile in Siklag. David had fled. He had attempted, initially, after he was anointed, for King Shaul not to view him as a threat and to be a loyal servant of King Shaul. And on the other hand, when his personal achievements outshined those of Shaul, a tremendous sense of envy became permanently entrenched within Shaul, and David eventually fled to Ziklag, one of the Philistine cities. When Shaul was in battle with the Philistines, David negotiated with the king of Ziklag, saying, let me join on your side. And of course, that was not David's intention. He was going to join the war, and he was going to be a fifth columnist. But after Shaul was hanged, David returned home to Ziklag. And it is at that point that David asked, after various events took place in Ziklag, which I'm not going into right now, the city had been burned by the Amalekim and the women taken captive, but after the captives were recovered, David said, Ha'ele b'achat are Yehudah. And to my mind, what that means is David is turning to God and saying, has the time come for me to realize my destiny? I have been anointed. Now Shaul has died. There is a surviving son of Shaul whose name is Ishbosheth. There is also a surviving son of the crown prince, Yonatan, whose name is Mephibosheth, two similar names. Mephibosheth was lame, and therefore he was not a viable leader because the prime function of the leader is to go out before the people in battle. It is not a job that you can do like FDR did sitting in a wheelchair. So Mephibosheth is not one who would be taken into account, but Ishbosheth very certainly was. And when David said, Ha'ele b'achat are Yehudah, my understanding is David is saying to God, do you wish me now to assume the reins of power for which you have chosen to have the prophet anoint me? And God says, go up, and David says, what city? Now, if David was following the pattern up until his day, he would be going back to Beit Lechem. You know that David is Beit HaLachmi. We say this in L'Chadodi every week. However, there are reasons not to go back to Beit Lechem, and yes, to go back to Hebron, including the fact that Hebron has satellite cities, and David is able to establish himself there. But in any event, God's answer to David is yes, the time has come, and David indeed goes up to Hebron and establishes himself there. And you read that when David returns to Hebron in Pasuk 4, Pasuk Dalet, you read, Vayavo Anshe Yehuda Sham, Vayavo Anshe Yehuda Vayimshechu Sham et David Lemelech Ad Beit Yehuda. The people of the tribe of Judah, in which Hebron is located, David is from the tribe of Judah. The people of Judah come and they then anoint him as king over Judah. the intervening chapters between David's anointment as king of Judah and between his anointment as king of all Israel includes a series of assassinations. The first assassination is the assassination of King Shaul's general. King Shaul's general was named Avner. Now, what happened was as follows. David was ruling upon David was ruling over Judah. Read the next psukim that we have here in the Hebrew and in the English. Yeah, we have it in both languages. Vavner v'ner sar tzava asher l'shaul לקח את ישבושת בן שאול ויעבירהו מחניים. אבנר בן נר, the Shaul's general, took ישבושת, the son of Shaul, and he crossed over to מחניים. מחניים is on the other side of the Jordan. וימליכהו אל הגלעד ואל האשורי ואל ישראל ועל אפרים ועל בנימין ועל ישראל כולו. And he crowned him king over Gilad and the Ashurim and Yisrael and Ephraim and Binyamin and over the entirety of Israel. So you now have, for the first time in Jewish history, two reigning kings at the same time. You have Ishbosheth and you have David. And Ishbosheth, you can see here, who's the powerful individual behind him? Avner. It is Avner who took Ishbosheth, who wasn't a spring chicken at this time, because you read further, Ben Arba'im Shana Ishbosheth Ben Shaul V'malcho Yisrael U'shtaim Shanim Malach Ach Beit Yehudah Hayu Acharei David. 40 years old was Ishbosheth when he ruled over Israel, but this 40-year-old was neither in the war with his siblings on the Gilboa, nor was he against the Philistines, nor did he himself initiate the inauguration. The inauguration was initiated by Avner. And he ruled for 2 years, but the house of Judah was after David. Now, the first of the two assassinations, which will lead to David's becoming king over all Israel, was the assassination of Avner. How did it happen? As follows. Shershei Lafam. Shaul had... No, I think sometimes when we read Tanakh, we fail to read... We fail to relate to it as... with the understanding that the people who are involved are people. And the intrigues are not that distant from the kind of intrigues that go on today. So, as I said, Cherchez la femme. Shaul had an unusually beautiful concubine named Ritzpa Bat Aya, who had a very sad life, a tragic life. Ritzpa Bat Aya, as Shaul's concubine, following Shaul's death, remained a magnificently beautiful woman. And the only one who, by law, might have succeeded in taking her as the next king. But Avner began carrying on with Ritzpa Bat Aya. And Ishbosheth called Avner on the carpet and said, "What do you think you are doing?" And Ishbosheth, obviously, when Avner is carrying on with the king's concubine, it is not merely a matter of infidelity to Ishbosheth, it is also raises questions of what his intentions are when the general is having an affair with the concubine of the last king. So Ishbosheth called Avner on the carpet, and Avner said to Ishbosheth, "Who the heck do you think you are? It is I who masterminded your inauguration, and you're not going to give me orders." Whereupon Avner went over to David and said to David, "I am your humble servant." David said, "If you are, I welcome you. However, bring me Michal bat Shaul, who had been my wife." And in my opinion, what was in David's head at that time was probably that he wished to generate an heir to himself who would be an heir both to the house of David and the house of Shaul. I do not think that women, as significant as we are always sought out for our own virtues. And in the case of Michal bat Shaul, certainly she was David's rightful wife, but nevertheless I believe that David had far more in mind when he demanded the return of Michal, and indeed Avner accomplished this. Now, yes. No, David said, "I will accept you subject to your bringing me. You want to come change sides and come over to me? You bring me. You, as the general of the house of Shaul, you go get me Michal bat Shaul." I'll get back to this later. Yes.
At what point was Michal told she wasn't going to have children?
That comes much later. That comes much later when David is bringing the Aron, the Ark, up from the Philistine cities. Okay, just file this in your minds and let's go further. Avner came over to David's side, General Avner. Let's follow the path of intrigue. Who is likely to be less than elated at this? David's general. David has a general who is named what? Yoav ben Tsruya, who is David's very powerful cousin. And David, throughout his life, relied upon Yoav. And on the other hand, there was tremendous friction between the two of them. David was not able to dispatch Yoav because he needed him. And so you had the general giving the king orders, and the king at times would be forced to swallow, can you say in English, to swallow a frog? That's not English. Okay. How do you say that in English? Okay, to swallow his pride. It's not just his pride. It was more, now there must be a better phrase than it. Okay, anyone who is a Hebrew speaker can come discuss with me what is livloat tzvardei, and we'll figure out how to say it properly in English. In any event, Yoav, seeing that David made a pact with Avner, smelled a rat. Whether or not he was right, I don't know. David thought that Avner took David at face value. I think by bringing Michal back to him, what Avner was doing is solidifying the bonds between the house of Shaul and the house of David, and they were both aware of what they were doing. In any event, Avner was leaving Hebron, left Hebron. Yoav summoned him back, and Yoav assassinated him. Okay. So you now have Ishbosheth's former general, who has crossed sides and then been assassinated. The next assassination along the route is of Ishbosheth. It's logical. And it was done by two toughs named Rechav and Ba'ana, two hooligans, who made the assumption that if they would bring Ishbosheth's head to David, they would be rewarded. And they were put to death for murder immediately by David. But the bottom line is David's prime foe was eliminated. So you have neither a general over the house of Shaul nor an heir. The only heir is Mephibosheth, the son of Yonatan. And as I explained to you, the task of a leader in Israel at this time was lohotzi ulahavi, to go before the people in war. And therefore, Mephibosheth, who is not able to jump on and off a horse, is not able to lead the people in battle. I presume his legs have atrophied. His muscles have atrophied. He is not a viable leader. It is at that time that we read the next passage. And it is this passage that presents me with the question that I wish to raise before us today. Vayavo'u, this is in Shmuel Beit Perek Hei, 2 Samuel chapter 5. Vayavo kol shivtei Yisrael el David Chevrona, lemor hinnu atzmacha uvesarcha anachnu. All of the tribes of Israel came to David to Chevron, and they said, "We are your bone and your flesh." Atzmacha uvesarcha. Gam itmol, gam shilshom. ביות שאול מלך עלינו, אתה היית המוציא והמביא את ישראל. ויאמר השם לך, אתה תראה את עמי את ישראל, ואתה תהיה לנגיד על ישראל. Yesterday and the day before, in other words, over the past many years, when Shaul was king upon us, you were the commander-in-chief. Motzi umevi is a military term. You were the one who took us out to battle and brought us back from battle. And God has said to you, you shall shepherd my people Israel, and you will be a prince over Israel. Vayavou kol zikne Yisrael el hamelech Chevrona, vayichrot lahim David, hamelech David brik b'chevron lifnei Hashem, vayimshechu et David lemelech al Yisrael. All of the elders of Israel came to the king to Chevron. And the king made a pact with them in Chevron before God, and they anointed King David king over Israel. Ben 30 shana David b'malcho, 40 shana malach. 30 years old was David when he reigned over Israel, and for 40 years did he reign. בחברון מלך על יהודה 7 שנים ו6 חודשים ובירושלים מלך 33 שנה על כל ישראל ויהודה. In Hebron did he reign over Judah, for the tribe of Judah, for 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem he reigned for 33 years upon all Israel and Judah. וילך המלך ואנשיו ירושלים אל היבוסי יושב הארץ. The king and his people went to Jerusalem, to the Jebusites. Jerusalem was then a Jebusite city. To the Jebusites, one of the Canaanite nations, the dwellers of the land. And he said to David, saying, you shall not come here. Vayilkod David et Metsudat Zion, he ir David. David conquered the fortress of Zion, that is the city of David. Vayeshev David b'mtsuda, vayikra la'ir David, vayiven David saviv min hamilo uvaita. David conquered David settled in the fortress, and he called it the city of David, and he built from the wall within. וילך דוד הלוך וגדול והשם אלוקי צבאות עמו. דוד grew greater and greater, and God was with him. And here's the question that I want to put before us. This has puzzled me for so many years. David asked God, Ha'ele ba'achat are Yehuda, shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah? Now, keep in mind that the prevailing pattern, which no one had broken before David, is that there is no such a thing as a capital city, and the ruler rules from his home city. David's home city is Beit Lechem. You all know from today, it is not a long journey from Beit Lechem to Hebron. How long does it take by car? 20 minutes or so. To go from Beit Lechem to Hebron, and the reasons for God instructing him to go to Hebron rather than Beit Lechem are not detailed. I have my own theory, but the two are nearby. It is the same thing as saying to David, you rule. God sent him to Hebron. Did anyone negotiate with him to move to Jerusalem? No. Yes.
There's still this distinction between them. He's been established as the Melech HaYehuda. He's in the transition towards being established as the Melech of Al Yisrael. And so now at this point, if he moves into a place that's a more neutral territory, it's Il Yehusi Adayim. It's still Il Yehusi. He conquers it for Am Yisrael. Now he can establish Yerushalayim as the center of Yisrael.
Fantastic. I want us to get into David's head, because that's exactly what he's doing. In other words, God has told you, you go to Hebron. David asked, Ha'ele ba'achat are Yehuda, and God told him to go where? To Hebron. Did God tell him to go to Jerusalem?
No.
Did David ask God? Sometimes we have this feeling that our leaders, our biblical leaders, are marionettes, that God makes decisions for them. I look back at Abraham Avinu, who lived for 175 years. Do you know how many times God spoke to him in the course of his lifetime? 6 or 7, depending upon how you count the beginning of Vayera. And those 6 or 7 were never to stop him from making a mistake. God left him to make his own mistakes. God did not intervene in Abraham's decision-making process, except for one time, Kol Asher Tomar Elecha Sara Shema B'Kola, when there was a disagreement about banishment of Ishmael from the house, God told him to follow Sarah. But other than that, God does not intervene to make human decisions. It is a... The studying of the divine interventions within Tanakh is a fascinating subject. Look at it sometime. Pay attention to that. David asked God, shall I go up to one of the cities of Yehuda? And God sent him to Hebron. Presumably, that is a life's mandate. The elders of Israel came to Hebron. I stressed that word in your sources, so that you see, the elders came to Hebron of Israel. They anointed him king upon Israel in Hebron. Nobody demanded of him to move to Jerusalem. So why did he move to Jerusalem? And I am going to follow. Exactly that line, which has been suggested to us by Ilana. Let's go back to the beginning of the source sheet. I brought you a Gemara in Chagiga, which quotes a perek of Tehillim, which Tehillim Kuf Chafet, which we recite today on Yom Yerushalayim. That perek is Shir HaMa'alot LeDavid, Omdot Hayu Ragleinu B'Sha'arayich Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim HaBnuya Ke'ir שחוברה לה יחדיו, ששם עלו שבטים, שבטייה, עדות לישראל, להודות לשם אדוני. Our feet were at your gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem rebuilt like a city, Shechubra LaYachdav, which joins all together. Chazal in the Yerushalmi give a drasha on those words, Shechubra LaYachdav, and they say, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, in Yerushalmi Chagiga Perikim al Halacha Levav, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Yerushalayim habnuya ki ir Shechubra LaYachdav, ir shehi osa kol Yisrael chaverim. A city which makes all Israel friends.
Chevron,
chibur, but we don't say ir shosa kol Yisrael chaverim ever about Chevron. We say it only about Jerusalem. Now, if any of you are familiar with the Yerushalmi, you're going to come and you're going to say to me, yes, but that is using the word chaverim in a technical sense regarding the chaverim during the time of the Pharisees who would ochlim chulin b'tahara, you would be right, but that does not take the statement michutz lipshuto. It does not cancel the straightforward meaning of the text, a city which makes all chaverim.
Now, David took the word chevron and did stylistic analysis on it and said, I have to find a city where two things have to be put together because it was God meant for me to go to chevron.
Okay, that's a very nice drasha, very nice. Now, yes.
Well, the text actually tells us that when he was in Chevron, he was ruling over Yehuda. When he was in Yerushalayim.
Yes, but whose decision was it to leave Hebron and to go to Jerusalem? That's my point. God told him, go to Hebron. He could have remained in Hebron. Why did he go to Jerusalem? Now, Ilana, who's sitting here, says Jerusalem is neutral territory.
Not only that, he completes the process of Kibush Haaretz, because the Yebusi Adayim Ba'aretz, so this way, he conquers the Yebusi city, and in that way he completes.
Well, no, he doesn't complete.
He does not complete.
He does not complete. There is, Shlomo doesn't complete either. He completes in a certain sense, but not in other senses. He completes by establishing his dominion over the entirety of the territory. That is certainly so, and that will come later. That will come much later in the life of David. By the way, anyone who thinks that the idea of conquering the lands of the seven nations means taking a submachine gun and killing off the people should just go ahead and read Tanakh about David and Shlomo's life and should read Rambam also. The thought chills the blood of anyone who hears it, but for some reason, most people think that that's what we were supposed to do. That's another shiur. Perhaps if I come back here, I will give you that shiur, but I am not going to do that today. Let us go on a little bit about the history of Jerusalem. Where is Jerusalem mentioned in the Torah? Where does it say Yerushalayim in the Torah? It doesn't. The answer is it doesn't. Shalem is mentioned. Shalem is like not a few biblical cities, and Roman cities followed the same pattern. You had more than one city with the same name. In Greek and Roman times, that often had to do with the city attempting to have a special relationship with the emperor. And therefore, you had a whole bunch of Antiochs. You had a whole bunch of Alexandrias, not one, because the city was attempting to establish a relationship with the emperor. In the same fashion, you had more than one Shalem in the land of Canaan. So where is Jerusalem mentioned in the Torah? The answer is it's not mentioned in the Torah. In Parashat Re'eh, approximately 14 times, I have to go back and to count this, approximately 14 times, you have mention of a term which we apply to Jerusalem, which is what? Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place where God has chosen. We are told over and over in Parashat Re'eh, you shall bring your offerings up to Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Why is Jerusalem not mentioned by name. So there are two very sweet commentaries made by Chizkuni, Rabbi Chizkiya ben Manoach, one of the many evil commentators on the Torah, and by Rambam Maimonides. Chizkuni says as follows, Lo persha hamakom, lefi shashchina sharta b'chama makomot, kmo Gilgal, Shilo, Nov, v'givon, uveit olamim, v'chayav adam shanot letalmido derech k'tzara. Chizkuni says the place was not specified. When God says over and over, you shall bring up your sacrifices three times a year, shalosh pamim b'shana yera'e kol zechorcha et pnei Hashem b'makom asher yivchar Hashem. The place is not specified because God's presence dwelled, reposed in several places, Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, and only then did it come to the Beit Mikdash. And when you're teaching your student, you need always to speak to the point, compactly. So God could not say, you shall bring up your sacrifices to Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, Yerushalayim. And therefore he says, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, and it includes all places. Rambam, on the other hand, has another explanation. Aval madua lo hizkiro b'ferush b'Torah v'lo yichado. Why was Jerusalem not specifically mentioned in the Torah and not named? And only hinted at in the words whom God will choose, which God will choose. Yesh bekach nedati shalosh chokhmot. Rambam says, in my opinion, there are three wise reasons that the name Jerusalem was deleted. Ha'achat kedei shelo yachziku bo ha'amim v'yilachamu alav milchama kasha ka'asher yedu shamakom hazeh matrat ha'Torah mikol ha'olam. The first is so that the nations not hold on to Jerusalem and they will fight over it if they knew that this is the place that God would had chosen. So I see everyone is finding this amusing. Perhaps if Rambam were here with us, he would say, Rambam is after the Crusades. He knows about people going to liberate Jerusalem from the infidels are the Muslims, not the Jews. Perhaps Rambam would say, well, we have this, when it's not mentioned, just imagine what would have happened through the ages if it was mentioned. V'asheni shelo yashchituhu otam, shehu bideihem ata v'yarsuhu k'chol sheyicholtam. And the second is that had the nations, had Jerusalem been named specifically in the Torah, any country, any people who was ruling over Jerusalem would have destroyed the city and not left it a built-up city for the Jews to take possession of. Vashlishit v'yayoter chashuva. And the third reason, which is really the primary reason, says Rambam, kedei shelo yivakesh kol shevet she'ezeh b'nachlato v'yichbosh otov, so that any tribe would not demand that Jerusalem be in their portion. V'yesha machloket v'aktata kmo she'era b'drishat hakuna. And that we wouldn't have a situation as occurred in the controversy over the priesthood, that you had warring factions. Ulefichach ba'atznivui shelo yibane beit ha'bchira ki'im achrei hakamat melech. And this is the reason why the commandment to build the temple comes chronologically only after we have appointed a king, kedei she'te'ach l'tabiyad achat, so that the decision will be in one hand. Everyone knows a king is commander-in-chief, and whether we like his decisions or don't, he's the king, and therefore he'll decide where he wants the capital to be. And for better or worse, the frictions, the rivalries will be pushed aside because people will accept, whether they like it or not, they will swallow what the king has done because that is part of the prerogative of being king. Now, both of these sources make a certain assumption about HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. What is their assumption?
That it's Jerusalem.
That it is Jerusalem. The choice of Jerusalem is obvious. It goes back to where? What took place in Jerusalem? How do we know that Akedat Yitzchak took place in Jerusalem? אחר הדברים האלה היה, ויאמר השם אל אברהם, קח נא את בנך, את יחידך, אשר אהבת את יצחק, ולך לך אל, אל ארץ המוריה, והעלהו שם לעולה על אחד הערים אשר אומר אליך. God said to Abraham, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Yitzchak, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him up as an offering on one of the mountains that I will show you. How do we know that Mount Moriah is in Jerusalem? Yeah, good question. How do we know? The answer is, and I didn't bring this to you, I will read it to you now. In Divrei Hayamim Bet, we have a pasuk. If anyone has a Tanakh, you should open it to Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Gimel. If you don't have a Tanakh, you should always have a Tanakh with you. Existential statement. No, ladies, I mean it. Have you ever caught yourself with free time, like waiting online somewhere? Have a Tanakh in your bag. Okay. 1 second. Perek Gimel. Here. Vayachel Shlomo livnot et Beit Hashem b'Yerushalayim b'har ha-Moriah asher nir'a l'David avihu asher hechin b'mkom David b'goren ornan ha-Yevusi. Shlomo began building the house of God in Jerusalem upon Mount Moriah. God who appeared to David his father where David had prepared on the threshing floor of Ornan or Aravna, the Jebusite. So in that pasuk you have Yerushalayim, Har HaMoriah, and Goren Ornan HaYevusi. It is there that we have the linking of these three names. Did David, and here we know that the Akedah took place in Jerusalem. Did David choose Jerusalem because the Akedah took place there?
It might be because he wanted to join Shaul and David, so he might have joined the patriarchs in the house of David.
The house of David is not yet in Jerusalem. David is going to Jerusalem. Let me point out to you again what I had said earlier. God told David to go to Hebron. After the death and battle of Shaul, David asked the equivalent of, is it time for me to exercise my rule for which I have been anointed? Vayomer lo ale. And when God said go up, God is telling him it is time for you to become king, to return from exile and to become king. And David said, where shall I go? And Hashem said, to Hebron. God did not tell David to leave Hebron and to go to Jerusalem. Just one moment, please. Is it possible that David's thoughts were impacted by the holiness of the Akedah? Of course it is possible. But what I would point out to you is that we have no traditions regarding the Akedah after the Akedah. You do not see Yitzchak making a pilgrimage to Har HaMoriah. As a matter of fact, when Yaakov refers to Yitzchak's relationship with God, he says, Elokei Avi Avraham Ufachad Yitzchak. Yaakov refers to God as the awe or reverence or fear of Yitzchak. You do not see Yitzchak making a pilgrimage. You do not see Yaakov making a pilgrimage. You don't see Yosef making a pilgrimage. Jerusalem surfaces for the first time during the time of David. This does not negate the divine choice of Jerusalem in any way. It simply means that there are moments in history where the awakening from above, to use Hasidic language, the Itaruta de la Eila and the Itaruta de la Tata, the awakening from below, correspond one and another. I puzzled for years what made David go to Jerusalem, and the question was answered to me by Rabbi Yaakov Meidan, the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat HaEtzion. And he answered this by pointing to two psukim in the book, one in the book of Yehoshua and one in the book of Shoftim, and I have brought them to you. In Yehoshua we read, Yehoshua Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Samech Gimel, we are towards the, there are two psukim, one from Joshua and one from Judges. Ve'et ha'yivusi yoshvei Yerushalayim lo yachlu bnei Yehuda lohorisham vayeshev ha'yivusi et bnei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. And the Jebusites, the dwellers of Jerusalem, the people of Judah could not expel them, and the Jebusites dwelled amongst the sons of Judah in Jerusalem to this day. Okay, in whose hands should be? Whose Jerusalem has fallen into the tribe, which tribe, the hands of, when the lots were cast and the borders drawn for the tribes, Jerusalem, according to the Pasuk in Yehoshua, belongs to whom?
Yehuda.
And the people of Yehuda did not succeed in conquering Jerusalem. In Shoftim, the book of Judges, we read, Ve'et ha'yivusi yoshev Yerushalayim lo horishu bnei Binyamin. Vayeshev ha'yivusi et bnei Binyamin b'Yerushalayim at hayom hazeh. And the Jebusites, the dwellers of Jerusalem, the sons of Binyamin did not expel, and the Jebusites dwelt amongst the sons of Binyamin until in Jerusalem until this day. So decide, who does Jerusalem belong to? The answer is Jerusalem is on the fault line, or the fault line between the two tribes, one of which represents the house of Shaul and the other represents the house of David. The fault line between them goes through Jerusalem. Does anyone know where? Have you ever been in the Mount Zion Hotel, the Cinematheque, Derech Hebron? Anyone?
Yeah.
Derech Hebron looks over a valley, an infamous valley, which is called Gay Ben Hinnom. It is also called the Tophet, and it is the place where the rites of Molech were, the pagan, horrific rites of Molech were practiced. Gay Ben Hinnom is the border. Anything that is northwest of there is Binyamin. Anything that is southeast of there is Yehuda. And the Gemara tells us that there was a little spit of land that went out from Yehuda to the center of the Temple Mount so that the Mizbeach, or the Ark, were in Binyamin's portion. In any event, what David HaMelech is doing, he is doing not because God told him. God told him, go to Hebron. David did not consult God on the decision to go to Jerusalem. This was David's decision. And you say to yourself, what made David decide that he needed to go to Jerusalem? The answer is he realized that he would not, he cannot be a partisan king, a melech sectoriali. He must be a king over all Israel and not over a part of Israel. So even though God told him, you go to Hebron, God did not give him an eternal order, but the elders of Israel came to him in Hebron. They anointed him in Hebron. No one negotiated with him to the best of our ability, to the best of our knowledge, to move his capital to Jerusalem. The moving of the capital to Jerusalem, to my mind, goes back to that same thought that David had when Avner crossed sides. And David said to Avner, I will accept you if you bring me Michal Bat Shaul. And David at that time was thinking of there being an heir to the house of David, who is an heir to the house of Shaul, so that Israel would be unified. And if you ask yourselves, my friends,
what Jerusalem represents to us, it is exactly this unity. It is that David, whom the nation was willing to accept from Hebron, because that is the pattern. Every shofet before David, every ruler of Israel ruled from his home territory. There was no such thing as a capital city. And David, in deciding there is now going to be a permanent capital city, and it is going to be situated upon the fault line between the two rival tribes, is making a statement that what I believe kingship in Israel is about is unifying the people. That there cannot be kingship in Israel, and I would humbly suggest that this is a message that we take very seriously today. That David was severing himself. I mean, think to yourself of the courage that is demanded. I do not know if the Masoret of the how active in people's minds the Masoret of the Akedah is. From the Torah, we know it is on Har HaMoriah. David is going to Har HaMoriah. David is certainly in his mind referencing back a point of sanctity in our history. But at this point, David had not decided that he would move the Aron to Jerusalem. That is a much, much later decision. At this time, the Mizbeach was located. The Mizbeach was located in Gibeon, and David, I brought you Psukim from Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Pasuk Kafalef, and I will end Perek Kafalef, and I will end with this. At the end of David's days, there was a plague. In order to stop the plague, this plague followed David's census. My understanding of the census is David wanted to take the people out to a war. That is another shiur, and I will not give it to you today. But at the time of the census was followed by a plague, and God, through the prophet, told David to stop the plague, build an altar in the threshing floor of Aravna Hivusi. And after he built that plague, regarding the building of that altar, we read as follows, the last source. Vayisa David et einav, vayar et malach Hashem omeid ben haaretz uven hashamayim v'charbo shlufa biyadon netuya Yerushalayim. Vayipol David vazkenim mechusim b'sakim al pneihim. David lifted up his eyes and he saw the angel of God hovering between the earth and the heavens, and his sword was extended towards Jerusalem. David and the elders who were covered in sackcloth fell upon their faces, covered in sackcloth because of the plague. Umalach Hashem amar el Gad lemor David ki yaled David lahakim mizbeach l'Hashem begoren ornan hayvusi. And the angel of God told David, and the angel of God told David, God was David's prophet in residence, his Jose. And he said to David, build an altar to God in the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Vayavo David ad Ornan, vayabet Ornan, vayaret David, vayetze min hagoren, vayishtachol David arpaim arza, vayomer David el Ornan, tena li mekom hagoren, veevne bo mizbeach la'ashem, bechesef male, tenehu li, vateatzer hamagefa me'al ha'am. David said to Ornan, give me the threshing floor so I can build an altar to God. I will buy it at full price, and the plague will be stopped from upon the people. Vayomer Ornan el David, kachlach. Ornan said, take it. Vayas Adoni HaMelech HaTov Be'inav Rei Natati Abakar Lo'olot V'amoregim Leitzim V'achitim LaMincha Kol Natati. Ornan said, I give it all to you, take it. Vayomer HaMelech David Lornan, lo, ki kano ikne b'chesef malei. I want you to know this is a turning point in Jewish history. This is another shiur that is worthy of being given, but this is a turning point when David, rather than taking in battle, takes by purchase. Vayiven David mizbeach la'ashem, Vayal olot ushlamim vayikal Hashem vayaneu be'esh min hashamayim al mizbach ha'olah. David there built an altar and sacrificed to God, and God answered him with a flame coming down from the heavens. This has happened previously at the point of consecration of the tabernacle in the desert, and it will happen again when Shlomo builds the Mikdash. Vayomer Hashem l'malach vayashev charbo en medana vayomer David zehu beit Hashem elokim vezeh mizbeach leolah l'Yisrael. David said, this is the house of God and this is the altar to God of Israel. It is only at this point, at the end of David's life, that the two visions become merged together. Up until now, Jerusalem is simply the capital, the national capital. It is at this point that it becomes as well the religious capital. In other words, for several decades after David's choice of Jerusalem, the Mizbeach, the altar, continues to be at Gibeon, and it is not in Jerusalem. It is only at the ending of David's wars, when David's wars are halted by the plague, and the angel extends his sword, keeping David in Jerusalem and not letting him make a pilgrimage to Gibeon, that these become married. Let me summarize what I have said in this shiur. I asked you in this shiur, how is it that God sent David to Hebron and David himself, 7.5 years later, went to Jerusalem? And I suggested that the choice of Jerusalem was not a divine choice for David. In other words, the place, Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, up until this point was not interpreted as there being one place that God will choose, but rather, as Chizkuni said, wherever God has chosen, wherever the tabernacle is, you shall there bring up your offerings. Why did David, following the two assassinations that we discussed, choose to go to Jerusalem? I suggested, following Rav Meidan's answer, that this was David's decision in order to unify Israel. That David knew that he needed to be not a sectorial king, but a king of all Israel, and it is that Jerusalem represents. And then I added another dimension, that Ir Shechubra LaYachdav refers not merely of joining the tribes together with each other, but also refers to joining us all with God, which is the face of Jerusalem, which is represented by the history of Har HaMoriah, but it is not that history which made David choose Jerusalem. It is the need to, which apparently does not just exist in our time, but existed ever since, and did not just exist then, but exists today. And I would just end my words by saying, sometimes you need to pay a little price for Jewish unity. In other words, David's place was Hebron. David's place was not Jerusalem. It means moving out of your comfort zone or moving out of a sectorial place in order to be able to embrace all Israel. And my friends, it ain't easy to do that. But if we don't do that, we're never going to see the third Mikdash. Shalom, shalom.